All right, let's open our Bibles to Matthew chapter 4. Matthew chapter 4. I'm going to get main verse here, Jake. Matthew 4, 3 through 7. And some other ones. Anthony, read Matthew 13:55. Caleb, John 1:46. Phil, John 7:5. Nathan, Matthew 21:23. Where are we at? Down here. Johnny Guzman, Deuteronomy 1:28. And over here, Vince, 1 Samuel 17:45, and Mark, read Matthew 4:11. Okay, we've looked for a couple of weeks Jesus being tempted in the wilderness, and the point that we're making concerning discipleship is that these are our preparations. These are things that you have to sort out. And you have to win some of these battles. The devil will try to stop you. That's the point of the temptation, is to derail you from your purpose in God. And so we've looked at a couple of these. Today we're going to look at the issue of identity and validity in Matthew 4, 3 through 7.
Now when the tempter came to him, he said, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread." But he answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city, set him on the pinnacle of the temple, and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. For it is written, he shall give his angels charge over you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone." Jesus said to him, "It is written again, you shall not tempt the Lord your God."
Okay, let's look at identity and validity. We already looked at the temptation for the material, stones being bread, the pinnacle of the temple, which is essentially shortcuts, taking shortcuts in life. So in this one, this actually encompasses all three of the temptations, and that is that the strategy of hell is to challenge our identity. And I want you to notice that in these, what the devil keeps saying, it's in the form of a question. If you be the Son of God. So the issue is challenging literally who you are. And the point of that is authority. It wasn't just challenging like, do you know your name? The issue in who you are determines what we call authority. And authority is the right to act on God's behalf. If you are called to do something for God, the only way that that's going to happen is if you also have God's authority, which is the right to act in His place or on His behalf. I don't know if you've ever you ever been pulled over by the police where they were sitting by the side of the road and someone steps into the middle of the road? I've had very small policemen do that to me. My car was much bigger than they were. But there is an authority. There's something behind them. This is actually what the devil is assaulting, is do you have the right to act for God? And so he's talking about his identity. So this is a constant assault of hell is on our authority, our right to act. Matthew 13:55.
Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary, and his brethren James and Joseph and Simon and Judas?
Okay, so They're beginning to discuss, is it possible that Jesus could be the Messiah, the one sent from God to deliver us? And their response is, this guy's dad, he works at a carpenter shop. In other words, he could not have, he couldn't possibly have anything to say to us. John 1, 46.
And Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Philip said to him, "Come and see."
Okay, so now it is a matter of where you come from in your upbringing. And so, in modern terms, this would be like, if we want somebody important, surely they would come from Washington or New York City. And it'd be like, so, you know, can anything good come out of Paulden? What this guy? This is a backwater. And so they're challenging again. Why would we listen to somebody from an insignificant place? John 7, 5. Did I get that?
I can get it.
For even his brothers did not believe in him.
Okay, even his brothers didn't believe in him. And so here now is his own family raised with him. And so they are denying this. So, this is always what the devil does. He always tries to demean or to make you feel like I shouldn't be doing this, or I have no right. Matthew 21, 23.
Now when he came into the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people confronted him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority?"
Okay, by what authority are you doing these things? In other words, what right do you have to come in and act for God? This is always the strategy of hell. I was 21 years old when I went out to pastor, and I looked much younger than 21. And so this was a constant refrain, is I would have people come in, they would look around the church, and then they would look at me, and the question they would ask was, "And who's the pastor here?" Because there's no way that this punk kid could be in any way representing God. So that's always a strategy from hell, is to make you feel. So it's one thing when you're excited in a conference. It's another thing when you are especially struggling. It's in the places that you struggle in life. This is where identity and validity really comes into play. In other words, what's common is that people personalize. They often, you know what, I tried some outreaches, it's not working, so maybe it's me. Maybe I just don't have what it takes, which is, that's the voice of hell. By what authority? Who do you think you are? You think you can do something for God. So that's always the strategy of hell. So, in these temptations, the devil tries to set the standard. And that's always a mistake in life, is when you let your enemies determine the standards. So, what the devil is saying is, you have no validity unless, and it gives three standards. It's based on what you have. Bread. This is true, that there be something material. And I can tell you from pioneering, and when you're starting out small, pioneering is starting from nothing. You don't have a group of people. There's nobody there. So you begin from nothing. And I remember this guy from another church came and visited on a Sunday night in South Africa. And our converts had just gotten saved weeks before. They didn't have the revelation of coming at night. And I remember he come around, he looked, and he sneered. Just the look on his face, he needed a poke in the eye right there. But the question was, where's all the people? So he probably had come from a large church. He's looking around where we're meeting. Where's all the people? So that's what the devil was saying, right? Is, if I can't see something, or maybe this is money or buildings or things like that. How many ministries do you have? Do you have ministries for old people, left-handed people, single people, divorced people, et cetera, et cetera? What you have. What you can do. That's what the devil said. You're not valid unless you can throw yourself off the pinnacle of the temple. So there is ability. There are things that you begin to do. Praying for the sick. For some, it's in their head You know, the struggle of getting people healed, and then again the devil assaults their validity, like, you shouldn't be doing this, you have no right. I get young pastors that they're counseling, and they're like, Pastor, I got to counsel marriages, and these people are older than I am. So that's your validity, if you be the Son of God. And then, of course, whether you get attention, and that was one of the points of the pinnacle of the temple, was you have no validity unless everybody can see you. So that's the struggle of whether we can serve quietly behind the scenes and no one know about it. If I'm not on stage, if I don't have a microphone, then I have no validity, and it works out in these different ways. So this is what the devil always assaults. Who do you think you are? What makes you think you can do anything for God? Let's talk secondly about outside voices. So the temptation, what the devil wants is for you to take your identity and your authority from outside of God. Verse 3, the tempter came to him. So Jesus already understands the will of God and God's purpose. What the devil wants is for him to hear a voice from outside of God's will. And this is always, and he uses voices from outside of God or outside the will of God to try to get, what's the point of the temptation? To change the direction of his life. So think about some of our outside voices. It has to do with other people's opinions. Anyone who says, I want to do something for God, I guarantee you're going to have someone speak to you against God's will. That'll be discouraging brethren sometime. Did I give Deuteronomy 1:28?
Yes.
Go ahead, Johnny.
Where can we go up? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts, saying the people are greater and taller than we. The cities are great and fortified up to heaven. Moreover, we have seen the sons of the Anakim there.
Okay, so the people are saying our brothers have discouraged our hearts. Because that is always what people get excited. Yes, I'm going to do the will of God. I'm going to get excited. I feel God dealing with me to outreach or to pray for the sick, or I feel called. I'm going to do something for God. What happens is the devil arranges somebody to come and discourage that. Don't get excited. Yeah, when I was young, I was excited too, and look at me. I'm old and cold and dead, you know. J.W. Ballinger talks about looking out the window in the hallway there one day, waiting for the van to come back or something, and he said one of the helpful brothers came up alongside him and said, and this is what pioneering is going to be like, J.W., looking out a window for people who never come. And that was somebody who's being helpful. That's true, you're going to have that. You're going to have some people we discover in our fellowship is you have people that their parents got radically saved, left sin, lived for God, raised them in the faith. And now when they express an interest in preaching, wait a minute. No, you got to set up your financial future first. Don't get carried away. What if you go out and it doesn't work out and you come back and you have nothing? You're living under the bridge in Granite Creek, man. Our brethren have discouraged our hearts. And then, of course, religious people, people from other churches. This is one of the battles. I get calls all the time from our men on the field is religious people coming and trying to tell you how to run your service. You know, I left this church, and then they come into our church, and they say, you know, back in the other church, how they did, it's like, then go back there. But why are you here? This is always, you know what, I saw on TV, and Benny Hinn, he's, I don't care. So always, outside voices. Then there are worldly standards. Is often what we do in calling by worldly measures is not very successful. We have, I think Ken Herman in Cottonwood, he's in the process of trying to get permits for a building, so he's meeting in a recreation hall and various different places that are not impressive. I have met in buildings that are not impressive. According to the world, you would not come and go, wow, that is, that's awesome. When I pioneered in the first place, it was a kind of an industrial park next to a gun store, which was kind of interesting because it was in the island of Tasmania and they were mostly lefties there. But so there's nothing that you would look at and say, that is impressive. And so often you'll hear voices, what you need, and unless you have, then it's not valid. And then, of course, you're going to hear voices from within. This is internal weakness. I don't feel qualified. Moses said, I can't speak. Jeremiah said, I'm too young. These are voices that the enemy uses to try to discourage you and get you to say, you know what, I can't do what God has called me to do. So let's talk about overcoming this temptation. Think about the survival strategy for Jesus here. Number one, you have to learn to ignore outside voices. So you have to make up your mind in life, if I decide to do anything good, somebody is going to try to talk me out of it. So what? If I try to do anything good for God, there's going to be internal fears. I'm going to be nervous. So what? I'm not going to base my life on someone else's discouraging report or even on my own fears. I refuse to give in to other voices. Number two is you have to reference off of God. In verse 4, verse 7, and verse 10, he repeats each time, it is written. Again, I say, it is written. So, who I am in life, what I'm called to do, and what I have the right to do is not based on, hey, what do you think? It's not based on, hey, how do I feel today? It's based on the Word of God. 1 Samuel 17:45.
David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied.
Okay, so here is David, the only one in the army who's willing to go against the enemy. And what does he come? He says, I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. I know who God is. I know what God has said. And that made all the difference. Didn't matter that he's 17 going up against a giant. Is his reference point is God. You have to be able to, everything you feel, I feel scared, inadequate. Well, what does the Word of God say? There are people that say, don't get carried away. But what does God say? Religious people say, what you're doing is invalid. What does God say? You have to come back to the Word of God. The final strategy for survival is trusting God. Part of the problem when the devil assaults you in these areas and you say, no, I'm not listening to that, I'm going to do right. The difficulty is that it is not immediate payoffs. It's not like you say, no, I'm not going to listen to that, and bells begin to go off, lights, sirens go off, in marches the lady like a game show with a big check. Say, you just made a right decision. Here you. It's not like that. Part of the problem is you go, I'm going to do right, and the struggle goes on. And it's like, wait, I said I was going to do right. I turned down that offer to do the will of God, and man, it's like I'm battling. This is where the issue of trust becomes important. If you're going to do a work for God, we believe in the principle of pioneering, starting from nothing. We send couples to places where there are no people. They're going to start from nothing. So that means there probably is going to be small crowds to begin with. They're going to meet in small buildings. Probably they're going to have small offerings. And so to continue in the face of smallness or difficulties, that is crucial. You have to trust God. I am going to trust God. I am going to outreach, even though I've been getting very little response. I am going to pray, even if there's no one else there. I'm going to deal with moral violations in the church, even if it costs me. In other words, the only reason why you would do those things is if I trust God. The future is in God's hands. Doesn't matter what I feel right now. Doesn't matter the voice I hear right now. I trust God. Long term, I know that this is going to pay off. Matthew 4, verse 11.
And then the devil left, and behold, angels came.
Okay, so this is the encouragement is, in the strategies of hell, the battle doesn't go on forever. Of course, there are seasons. That's another thought, another lesson. But here's the point: is something does change. Is there is a breakthrough? Something breaks in finances, fruitfulness, all kinds of different areas in life. But you have to win the battle of identity and validity. My calling, my authority comes from God, not from me or other people. Okay, let's open for questions then. You have something you want to ask that this brings up? Andy?
You mentioned if you're a young pastor pioneering and you have to counsel a marriage that these people have been married for years, and if a pastor's feeling he has a lack of experience when it comes to marriage, what is there, people call you, what are they usually asking about the particular situation that they're going to be talking about? Or
Andy, that is as varied as there are people in the universe. Yeah. So what are people going to ask? Listen, I've been doing this for 32 years and I still occasionally get surprised, like, wow, that's different. So there's no way of knowing. Yeah. The simple rule of thumb is converts don't care. It's only religious people that care. People from other churches, they're hung up on what's your experience, how old are you, et cetera, et cetera. I was 21. My wife was 19 when we went in the ministry. Okay, that's how we started. We both absolutely looked like children. Our converts, we had the vice president's wife from Satan's Riders, her husband, he had a grow operation under the house. Okay, he's a drug dealer, he's a criminal. These are I had the incredible Catholic. I had just raw sinners. They actually, it came time for, I don't remember, one of our birthdays, and they were shocked. They were like, that's how old you? Man, we thought you were a lot older. Because they were converts. They didn't care. And my first marriage counseling was with a couple. They already had a house paid off. They had been married longer than I had, et cetera, et cetera. But they were converts. So what I had to say to them was revelation. Religious people, that's a different world. I'm not called to build on religious people, so I don't really care. Yeah. So, God will help you. And then you get advice, because there's always something tricky. Eli.
When it comes to religious people, how much, obviously there's some point where this is going to be harmful, these people need to leave. How quick are you to do that when you deal with them? You know that they're religious. You know that they're not interested.
Yeah, so the simple rule of thumb, Eli, is it depends on degrees. There are some people that the moment that I meet them, I can tell this is not going to work. So, first of all, I'm witnessing on the street. If I'm witnessing somebody and they're like, oh, yes, and Benny Hinn is my favorite. then okay, have a nice day. There's no point in me pressing. You really need to come. The person is likely to cause trouble. Second, when people come to your church, this is a matter of feel and sensitivity, but again, I get people who, those are literal conversations that, hi, my name is Greg, I'm the pastor of the church here. Oh, yes, I thought I'd come and visit, and Joyce Meyer is my favorite, and blah, blah, blah. I was listening to Benny Hinn the other day, and he said, that person's not going to make it. They're not going to like my church. So when they're talking about we're searching for another church, some of those people, as I look them in the eye and say, I don't think you're going to enjoy it here. Really what we're about is we're actually after people. We're not trying to get people to come from other churches. We're trying for unsaved people. That's our aim. So I've done that. And then third rule of thumb is that they'll be fishing you. My wife and our children, our friends, we actually are a praise and worship team. Right? So the correct response is, I was just looking for a praise and worship team. Or I've had to make blatant, oh, hey, we'll come, we'll leave our church and come and be your, we'll do music in your church. Right? So, or my wife's a prophetess. So in those kinds of things, no, I'm not interested. I don't know you. We don't allow people to minister without knowing their character first.
But it is not always immediate that you tell them.
No, but that's, no, it's not always immediate. So, but there are simple things that you can tell and you can make it not advantageous to them. Things like that. When you don't bite and say, yes, I'm looking for a worship leader, things like that, you save yourself a lot of grief. I don't give people false hope. When they're telling me the reason why they're wanting to come to our church is they want ministry in my church, why would I want to even give them under false pretenses? Those are the people who say, you come to our church, I wouldn't even dream of using you in ministry for 6 months. I need to know you. Well, to them, that's like an eternity. 6 months out of the spotlight. So that solves a lot of problems. Right? But then there are other people, they come, yep, they got saved in another church. They start coming, they're harmless for now, and just wait and see. Now, if they start contradicting you in Bible study or spreading to other people how, some strange doctrine from the Bible, then you have to deal with it at that point. But the main thing, first and foremost, is if you understand, if you build on other people's converts, you'll be sorry. So if you have that mentality, there's no advantage in trying to get. The rule of thumb is easy come, easy go. You got to remember, it's the same as divorce, right? Hey, I'll dump my husband and go with you. Yeah, so that means then you'd do that to me too, wouldn't you? That's how it is in churches. I'm going to burn my church and join yours. And that's what they'll do to you too. So that's just an overall. Somebody else, Jake.
Verse 7 in the same chapter. I was actually already wondering this. Before. It says, "You shall not tempt the Lord your God." Is that referring to just blasphemy and insulting God on our behalf? Like, how does that apply to us tempting the Lord your God?
Well, we're not at that lesson yet, so that's the next lesson.
Is it?
Yeah. We haven't got there yet, so we'll develop that. If I told you now, Jake, you wouldn't come next year. You go, no, I wouldn't. No point in me getting up this morning. I already know the answer. We have Mark.
There's obviously a balance between direction and discouragement. How do you balance the if I have a call or feel that God has called me to a particular purpose, and I get discouragement or I get direction. How do you balance whether you know that the other than just is there anything besides just prayer?
Well, obviously that can be extremely broad, but the issue is that's why you have if you have a relationship with a pastor, he can give you some guidance sometimes in certain things, right? So that is, there are guys that are, they're discouraged. They just need encouragement, and that's how they'll gain direction or a refocusing. As a good pastor can help you to focus your thinking. You might not, because in discouragement, you might not be seeing things correctly. So a pastor can give you direction. You're looking at it wrong. This is actually the way you should be looking at it. So, but of course, there can be hundreds of different ways that would work out in life, right?
Discouragement, I mean, it's kind of par for the course, like, you know, having to wrestle for fear. But is there a point where you can gain some level of dominion over intimidation and fear in pursuing God's calling? I mean, is there sometimes a, you know, I talk to guys on the field, another guy, and there's just a real, I mean, intimidation and fear. They're frozen in their tracks.
I think, Daniel, the issue is it seasonal, or is it endemic, or is it inside permanently? You know, some guys that's because of their past and background. You've heard me in lots of different ways that I say you want to do something for God, you need to settle your rejection issues. That's crucial. You got to settle people who in the past have gotten the message that they lack worth or that they don't have value. If they don't settle that, you bring that into the ministry, then the ministry is a torment, because God always has the whole nature of ministry is calling you to things you can't do. That's a given. That's what calling is. God doesn't advertise on ZipRecruiter and find the most qualified. He calls us to something already that we can't do. But if you have something endemic, and it's already inside. Saul, that was already inside, right? He's hiding in the baggage because he somehow got the message, I'm not good enough, I can't do it. So therefore, the call of God actually was a torment to him. And then he manifests by being too harsh, by not judging sin, all the different things. So discouragement is, if it's seasonal, I mean, that's, I get discouraged sometimes when there are things that are frustrating. It depends on how I deal with it. But it's not like you should say, if I do the will of God, I'll be tormented till the day I die. No, that's incorrect. Does that answer your question? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Vince?
How would you settle something that internalized rejection issues?
Well, you have to sort out. That has to be sorted with God. Why do you feel the way that you feel? Where does that come from? You know, there's resources that are available. You know, I give people books, things to help them. But in essence, Jesus responded to the Word of God. Anything you feel, okay, I feel inadequate, what does the Bible say? That's a person's, that is your personal responsibility, is to find out what the Word of God says, begin to pray over that, not just to know it in general terms, but to personalize it. So a person who has rejection issues and identity issues, they have to come before God. God, you have to make this revelation. You have to heal something in me that is broken. And, you know, so that comes firstly from the Word of God. Secondly, from praying the Word of God into you. Thirdly, there's resources, books that are available. You can deal with those issues. And fourthly, with counseling, you know, that's something that can help as well. So all of those put together, you have the hope of getting to a point where you are not fundamentally starting from a position of torment. Yep.
I had a friend of mine talk to me about personal problems he's going through, you know, and just or things that he had gone through, and said, I said, have you ever talked to pastor about it? Yeah, I thought about it. I'm not against it, but is he just, you know, I don't know, is he just going to tell me to read my Bible and pray? You know, I already tried to do that, and they didn't quite grasp what they were going to, why counseling was going to help them. I told them that, you know, sometimes there's insight that they don't have, that the pastor might be a supernatural dimension where you open yourself up to somebody to give you some wisdom. But I was wondering, is there a better answer for that where I can, to a new convert or somebody who doesn't quite, not used to counseling with a man of God, I can counsel them, hey, you need to go talk to pastor because this, why can this help you?
Yeah, so it's not a matter of three easy statements, but that is the whole point. Shepherds give guidance. That's what when you say pastor, that's what a pastor is, a shepherd. He gives guidance. And yes, as God equips a pastor with supernatural insight, right? I have people that talk to me, and sometimes I'm able to pinpoint something they can't see. The real issue. This is the real issue. Supernatural wisdom. This is the path that will help you. You know. So, you know, people who don't want to counsel, that is actually, they have issues within them. You know. Unfortunately, we bring things with us in life, right? So some people they have bad experiences with people in authority. They have bad experiences with people who've taken advantage of their, you know, openness or whatever. So, but as bottom line is, people who don't view a pastor correctly, they don't do well in life. They struggle. That's all there is to it. And there's generally not good reasons why people withhold from seeking godly wisdom. Anybody else? Jake?
So as a man with pride, in your situation where they're asking where the people are, how did you react without becoming defensive and having your own feelings hurt? Is that something you just settled early on with what Vince is talking about,
Yeah, the issue again is I wasn't sweating his comment because I didn't want him anyway. I already knew that I didn't want this guy in my church. Again, there is nothing in me. Someone comes, says, I'm going to Calvary Chapel, the Heights of Baptist Church, you know, Assembly of God, and I'm thinking of coming to you. There is nothing in me that goes, wow, that's great, awesome, yeah, you should come here. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm called to do. So in that sense, that guy, I didn't want him in my church, so I'm not going to sweat his opinion. It's like, whatever. So that's knowing what I'm called to do settles that. Because the people who are saying that, again, new converts don't say that. People that got saved and God is delivering them from drugs and broken lifestyles, they come, it never occurs to them that we're meeting in your living room. That is what they're focused on. This is wonderful. God's helping us. Right? So that's how you handle that. Johnny.
When talking to, say, if you're witnessing and somebody says, oh, yeah, I believe Jesus actually went to such and such church, do you continue to test the Spirit or do you just leave it that way?
I certainly won't spend an hour and a half with someone in just theological arguments. But you understand, simply that someone says they go to church doesn't mean they're saved. So, you know, yeah, I probe. In South Africa, everybody went to church. I mean, it was incredibly rare. It was almost like, man, ladies and gentlemen, I met a guy, he doesn't go to church at all. That's incredible. You know, that would be very rare. Everybody went to church. Drug dealers went to church. It was in them. So, and they had the words. So they would, yeah, I'm born again. Yes, I've been redeemed. You know, they had the word, so then you had to get, okay, let's talk about when you were born again. I'm talking about you left the drugs and the alcohol. You're no longer sleeping with people you're not married to, you know. And as one guy said to me, when I got to the sleeping with the people you're not married to, he went, ooh, now that's a difficult one. So yeah, but then you get into people, then they want to argue eternal security. It's like, whatever, move along. I think that comes into not casting your pearls before swine, right? Don't waste your time with arguments with, of course, people in cults, Jehovah's Witnesses, and yeah, Mormons. Yeah, you're very unlikely to convince them, because it's a spirit. It's not factual. But people from other churches, sure, you can probe a little bit, and there are people often that their first instinct is, yes, I'm a Christian. You probe a little bit, and it's like, yeah, and conviction will come. So that's fine. But then you get people that they obviously have some form of experience, and then you can see you're just wasting your time. Overall, in a lot of these things, you guys, some of you you're asking me questions that I can't give you. This is what you say. And when they say, it's not a manual, that's why you pray for wisdom. You pray for sensitivity. Like I say, I can't put in an app. There are people that when I was pioneering, they came and I could just feel, this is not going to work. I could feel it because God was helping me. So that's the sensitivity, knowing when to push. There's a time to push, even though their initial response seemed to be that they're not favorable. There's a time to let it go. Yeah. Vince?
For the people that will come against, I guess you could say, like a level of commitment or encouraging you to not be as involved, like people and family and stuff like that. Does that stuff need to be judged right away to that person, or can it be something where I just decide to not listen to their words, but I don't confront them?
Yeah, I don't know.
Same
there's
thing as what you're saying.
Yeah, that's a wisdom factor, you know. So I would suggest that a birthday party is not the time to rebuke your grandmother or somebody, you know. There's a wisdom involved. There are people that they don't actually affect. They have an opinion. It's like, yeah, and I move along. Then there are people that they have an effect, and it may be important for you to say, no, I reject that, and I'm not going to do that. But I can't. Again, you got to pray.
I have a experience of the two things together that you said, the rejection thing and the discouraged person that I wanted to accept me.
Yeah.
It's discouraging me, so I didn't want to come against them right away. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
But it really affected me, and I was able to get the words out.
Yep. Very good. Anybody else? Okay. We'll leave it at that.